Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Here's a chance up the middle, and that shot scores! McLeod on the first shot of the game beats Dustin Tokarski, and it's 1-0, 43 seconds into this one. Here's Tuck into the slot for a shot, scores! Dylan Cousins! 2-0 Buffalo! Burns stepping into the lane. Here's a chance. Scores! McLeod goes to the net and a bouncing puck. And he banks it in. It's 3-0 Buffalo. Thompson turns. Fires it. Off the post. Here's a chance for a third goal of the game. Oh! McLeod. Are they going to give him a goal?
Yeah, they're going to give him a goal.
McLeod picks up a hat trick goal. And the Sabres have the 4-2 lead with 24 seconds to go.
We have an official scoring change to start the day. Actually, we don't.
Did I get an assist? Did I get an assist on McLeod's hat-trick goal?
George in the control room wants everybody to get their hat back because he doesn't think it was a real hat-trick goal.
I applaud the fan base that threw hats right away knowing it was going to be Ryan McLeod's goal, because even the NHL wasn't sure if it was Ryan McLeod's goal, and it turned out to be Ryan McLeod's goal. But the hats went on the ice right away. The people of Buffalo knew the rule that if you get fouled on a apparent empty net goal, even though McLeod never touched the puck, right? The last player to touch the puck was Thompson. It ended up being McLeod's goal. So they went back and forth on it. But yeah, great on the fence to recognize that.
How much did it didn't interest me one iota once the game was done. How much did they actually go back and forth on the score sheet?
Four times. So it was first given to McLeod, hat trick. And then before the game was over, it had been changed to Thompson. Then it quickly went back to McLeod and back to Thompson. And it was kind of funny to follow up on X and social media, because at one point, I think Buffalo News' Mike Harrington said, final word from the NHL should be handed out here in the next 5 to 10 minutes, because there was literally a conversation going on inside the NHL to see who had the empty net goal. So it was a play-by-play of back-and-forth affair going on after the game.
Wild. What's the big takeaway?
Well, okay, let's just for one thing, and I said to you before the show started, what I think was the most important part of Ryan McLeod's hat trick goal, despite the fact he got taken down, never touched the puck or whatever, is that as soon as Tage Thompson shot the puck, Ryan McLeod took off. And think of so many times where a player is going to shoot in an empty net from his own zone, and everybody just stares at the puck and watches the puck. Is it going to go in? Is it not? Oh! It's like they all become spectators, right? They all become fans, part of the, you know, thousands that are in the building. And then they're like, icing. Oh, maybe I could have beaten out the icing. Or you know what? Maybe if you would have rushed up the ice, not only would you have beaten out the icing, you would have scored an empty net goal if they would have missed, and you would have got an extra goal. And maybe you get that two or three times in the year, and instead of getting 18, you get 21 at the end of the year. And you can say, hey, I was a 20-goal scorer in the NHL. Like, it just, to me, that's an opportunity. So Thompson shoots it, and Ryan McLeod takes off. Mm-hmm. And I like that out of Ryan McLeod, that he's like, I'm not going to just sit here. Like, I'm going to see if he misses. Maybe I get a freebie. Maybe I get my hat trick if he misses. He'd end up getting his hat trick that way.
Yes, and since, again, boldly stating that he does not hang any of his career hats on offense, McLeod now has 6 points in the last three games. So long may he contradict himself, whether it was a intended contradiction or whether it was merely, you know, a typical hockey cliche answer in that I know what I've been hired to do. So if I go prolonged stretches without doing what others want me to do, that might not be the biggest thing that, you know, you need to look at. The challenge here, or the what's interesting within it, obviously, his multiple points against Ottawa led to a win. His multiple points against Carolina led to a win. I think we're still looking at a team that has more to give offensively, but it's kind of, you know, been interrupted for certain players. We haven't seen, you know, a lot of players trending towards really high league-leading type career years, i.e. it's not like they have a bunch of players in the top 30 in NHL scoring and to that extent. Now, at the lower end, it would be awesome if many of your bottom six were trending towards personal best seasons. That can certainly turn things. The irony is, you could probably say that about McLeod now, but he's no longer in your bottom six.
He's your top line center now. Oh. That's the thing. Yeah, he's not a bottom six guy. He's your top line center. He was elevated to play with Thompson and Zucker halfway into the game. And
he was elevated when Thompson was hurt earlier this year. He's been elevated at minimum to second line many times. So, yeah, it's hard to label what and where Ryan McLeod is on this team right now.
Well, and again, in the middle of the ice, if you move Thompson to the wing and you don't have Yuri Kulik and, you know, Dylan Cousins hasn't been that answer in the middle of the ice as your top line guy. So that's why Lindy Ruff made the switch yesterday, putting McLeod with Zucker and Thompson. So it puts a challenge in the middle of the ice right now for the Buffalo Sabres. Obviously, you got, you know, Krebs and Tyson Kozak, and Kozak's on the ice 6-on-5 at the end of the game. Like, he was on the ice when they got scored, not on him. It was a really nice play, I feel, to make it 3-2 by Gustas Bear to Natchez, and it's in the back of the net. But you have Kozak on the ice. And then your next group that goes on the ice has Quinn, I believe was Paterka and Tuck. It may have been like, and then you go with McLeod, Thompson, and Zucker. Like,
well, Krebs was on the early.
Krebs. You're right. Yeah,
Krebs, it was Krebs that was on before. Krebs specifically for me.
Yeah,
caught my attention with his aggressive nature in the 5-on-6 situation after the second goal had gone in. That was important. They had to show a different urgency, level of commitment to the situation, and that was to not sit back and let it happen to you again. So
Carolina can move the puck. Carolina's got good players, and they can move the puck. They moved the puck in the third period, you know, like crazy. The other thing about the empty net goal is the Sabres ended up with zero shots on goal in that period, and they ended up with a goal. That's a funny, quirky kind of stat, right, to hang your hand on. This is the first time it's happened in a 20-minute period that a team without a shot ended up getting a goal, but at the same time, oh my gosh, like, you have zero shots in 20 minutes when you're fighting for wins right now. And I get Carolina had possession.
But they were up by three, so.
Yeah, that's score effect. I get it, but zero shots.
No,
like, if you have six, it's a low number. Zero, it's below deck right there. Like, it just that's a tough look.
Well, it is, unless you dive deeper in, and I'm assuming the coaching staff wasn't super concerned based on high danger and the fact that Buffalo did have some looks but didn't get shots on, from what they perceive to be good chances. So, okay, so you miss those. They don't technically end up as a shot. It wasn't like you spent the entirety of the third period sitting inside your own zone. So, I don't know. I feel like I've seen it. Look, Lindy's been around so long. It maybe not zero, but Marty, my memory tells me I've seen game after game after game with Hasek after Miller, then you know, there've been many games where they've been badly outshot while leading in the third period.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. And it wasn't 25 to nothing. What was it? 8-0?
It was altogether, it was 8-0. Okay, so according to Natural Stat Trick, they gave the Sabres a shot at Natural Stat Trick, but it was 8-0. Yes. Okay. So Natural Stat Trick, for their accounting department, the computer probably doesn't register a goal and not having a shot on goal. So that's the problem. But okay, good win. Good win. You beat a good team. You're up 3-0. Good job, right? Let's put that in perspective. Luukkonen was great, looked really good. That was awesome. McLeod playing the way that he played, a hat trick. That's awesome. Okay, I like that. Here's my one concern when I watched the game, and the thing that I kept going back to was Lindy and the coaching staff have talked about one thing in the 2 days of practice. We're on the perimeter. We're on the outside. Like, you look at the Seattle game, they just felt way too comfortable on the outside. We have to battle to get to the inside. We have to get to the middle. I didn't see it. Okay, there are three goals other than the empty net or rush goals.
No. The end of the second period, it's right inside on the doorstep.
Okay.
It's a face-off win down low. It was absolutely the middle.
But, okay, so, Duffer, thank you for that, because that's the, I'm trying
done.
To put all my
Enjoy
thoughts together. Thank you. You did your job. Thank you. You were reading my brain. Okay, the first two goals are rush goals. The third goal, the goal with 4 seconds left in the period, that's what Lindy Ruff and the coaching staff wants more out of. Mm-hmm. My issue with that is that if it's not the end of the period, if they are not aware that there's no time left, do they throw that puck to the net and do they all crush the net? I don't think that happens, because the whole game was nothing in the middle. I look at the numbers at the end of the game. They had 3 shot attempts from the cycle. From the slot. 3 mm-hmm. shot attempts on cycle from the slot. Like, Carolina had 11. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you could see Carolina puck possession, cycle, get to the middle, get a scoring chance, get the puck, cycle, like wear teams down. The Sabres are still not there. Look, I didn't think it was going to change in one practice, mm-hmm. but I wanted to see that focus. Let's get to the middle. And you get, you know, the McLeod first goal, rush, Cousins goal, rush, and then a late period goal where, okay, well, let's throw pucks to the net because the time's going to expire. Like, that to me has to be even more of a focal point moving forward. You have to get to the middle of the ice.
Yeah, and there's many ways to look at each game, because it's sometimes a distinctly different matchup. And that is to say, Carolina, by nature, in the Brind'Amour era, has a higher shot volume, but more specifically, a higher shot attempt volume.
Yes.
Based on a lot of what you just said. So analytically, and again, some of it's score effect for sure, because they were up by 3. You didn't have many Sabres who were on the right side of it, i.e. plus 50% of the shot attempts last night. That's fine. I mean, but at the same time, my concern would be, and I don't know how you gauged Lindy's post-game presser. Now, again, Lindy knows exactly where they are in the standings, so I don't anticipate him ever coming in and, you know, being so excited, like, until they actually get to where he needs them to get to. But I thought, like, I think his words were, we played with good intentions, right? That left a lot of room for you to evaluate what they did or didn't do.
Yes.
They, to your point about the lack of inside chances. Do you know what statistic the Sabres are number one in the NHL in?
High danger chances.
High danger shooting percentage.
Yes.
Yes. And in some case, like they've scored on 24% of their high danger chances.
Yes.
There is more than half of the league that is like below 18 for sure. In some cases, 17%. When you start measuring shooting percentage, 1 to 2% can be perceived as a pretty significant difference over the course of 82 games.
Yes.
Buffalo has a wide edge in this. And why do they have a wide edge in this? Because they don't get enough high danger opportunities.
Well, they don't get enough high dangers. And you know what also? And this is like so backwards, but mid-range shots. Mm-hmm. They don't get a ton of mid-range shots. And what is mid-range shots? It's not the point shots. It's like just below the tops of the circles, mm-hmm. and just like from the hash marks, a little below the hash marks and out. Like the high slot, the quiet area, they mm-hmm. don't get anything from there. Mm-hmm. They get some high danger chances because it's a point shot deflection. That deflection is what? It's a high danger chance. Point mm-hmm. shot rebound. It's what? It's a high danger chance. They'll get some, and they get good percentage when you look at the shooting percentage. But the mid-range is like, it's a dead zone right now.
So again, roster construction could lead to this area looking different from team to team to team. But when you phrase it that way, where is the disconnect? Where would you like to see more of the shots coming from, i.e. personnel-wise? Like, is that an area that, based on how Buffalo has three close to elite offensive defenseman types, is this where you'd like to see Dahlin, Byram, Power getting more great looks from just inside of the top of the circle? Is it winger-driven? Is it... We talk about center so much, and center can have a trickle-down when you don't have as much depth there as maybe you thought at the start of the year since Thompson had to move to the wing.
Yeah.
But how do you view that when you say it the way you did?
The way that I view it is I think Sabres have some good shooters. I would like those shooters to be able to find that area. So I would like Quinn to get more shots from higher out. Like, mm-hmm. I think the closer to the net Quinn gets, okay, you get high-danger chances, but... do you see as much net? Are you able to use your shot as much? We talk about Tage Thompson of that often. The closer to the net Tage gets, I feel like it's easier for the goalie to just say, I hope the puck is going to hit me. But if you're a little bit, and I'm not talking 20 feet further out, I'm talking 12 feet out, mm-hmm. then you're like, okay, Tage can beat a goalie from that range because he sees more room. Quinn can see more room. Like Cousins has a great shot. You saw the goal he scored on Tokarski yesterday, comes in on the rush. That area, I would like that area to be utilized more in zone, right in between the tops of the circle in the slot. Like if you're going to put a bucket of pucks in the middle of the ice and you're going to tell guys, work on your shooting, that's where they're going to shoot from. They're not going to shoot from 5 feet out. They're not going to shoot right from outside the crease. They're going to shoot from the high slot. That's the area that I think the Sabres have to utilize more. And it's not the defense, because the defense would be on the rush. I think the defense have to be good at the blue line, you know, when you're in the zone. But mm-hmm. I feel like the cycle has to find that player in the slot a lot more often. And the Sabres are not a good cycle team right now to be able to find that and to put teams on their heels in the zone. Like, when's the last time we saw a long shift, a 45-second shift in the offensive zone with mm-hmm. multiple scoring chances from the slot? It doesn't happen that often. Well, it happened probably six times in the game yesterday, Carolina in the third period alone, right. where they were in the zone a long time and they got shot from the slot, right? That's what it is.
Right. But you typically refer to Buffalo in your mind as a rush team.
Exactly. So. Exactly. So yesterday, two out of the three goals that they scored yeah. on the goalie was rush chances.
So the line changes paid off, moving Claude up from the second line to the first line between Zucker and Thompson. And obviously, as the game went on, they got a couple more goals in the second period. This is another one of those situations, like, okay, you get the win, you move on, because there's really no point in nitpicking any of it, like, you got the win. That's all that matters. You also know full well that Carolina, like, especially Brendan Moore, absolutely furious with their effort. They were so sleepy from the start. It's almost unfortunate Buffalo didn't pile on in the first period, right? Like, Carolina just didn't look.
Byram had a great chance.
But guess what? And, Carolina has now, as I said on the show yesterday, they have two wins. Two!
Yeah.
On the road since before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Like, they are not a very good road team right now. And for whatever reason, they started Tokarski, even though they were not in a back-to-back. They weren't in a tired situation. They weren't going into another, you know, back-to-back situation. And I don't know. I didn't think the first goal was very good on Tokarski. You might see it differently. And
I didn't think the third goal was good. I don't think Cousins is a good shot.
Right. Well, we saw the exact Cousins goal against Montreal, too, and I think a few other times. So we've seen that release from him from that exact position. But, yeah, I didn't love the others.
But look at look to Tokarski's positioning on the Cousins goal. He's not square. Mm-hmm. He's off angle, and he's guessing blocker side when the shot goes glove. Mm-hmm. Right? And is it a good goal? It's a good shot. Mm-hmm. This is when I wish we had, you know, in Major League Baseball, somebody hits a home run and it says that would have been a goal in 27 of the 30 ballpark or whatever. I wish we'd have had a stat yesterday that said that would have been a goal on 82 of the 87 goalies that have played this year. I think that number would have been really low. I think that, you know, there's a lot of goalies that make that save, and Tokarski didn't make that save.
Yeah.
Okay, great on the Sabres. They were able to take advantage of a goaltender that gave you a couple of goals that were not good. The first and second goal were not great.
Yeah. Guess what? Going back to the wins per eight statistic.
Hey, we're 5-2-1, and now we're 1-1.
They came off a 5-2. Yes, so now they're into this next eight-game segment. They're 1-1, which means six games to go. Go 4-1-1, which is not ridiculous, right?
It's not ridiculous. Is it challenging? Yeah, it's obviously challenging, but you that's how you get back in it. You got to put some wins together. Mm. Now, you look at this. In a week, you could maybe end up catching the New York Rangers and find yourself, okay, like within the, you know, 6 points or of the of a playoff spot. Like, that's kind of like the 2 points per week thing.
You can dumb it down. Make it 1 point a week the rest of the way.
1 point
they're still going to make it.
Is the number 90?
You're going to mid-April. Well, you said the number was 90. But my wins per eight thing at 5-2-1 gets them above 90. So that's like 92. 92?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought.
So I'm probably pushing more than necessary here. So, but yeah, I mean, we're sitting here on January 16th. So you have, like, what, 12 weeks left in the season almost?
Yeah, almost 3 months.
Okay, so get a point a week. I don't care if it's a moving target. They're not all going to move up at the same time.
No, they definitely are not going to move up at the same time. But
anyway, it's one game. You got to just go next against Pittsburgh, who's, you know, going to see Jari removed from the mix today, you know, presumably after clearing waivers. Head down to Wilkes-Barre. You want a little footnote from Wilkes-Barre last night?
Yes, go ahead.
They were up 3-0 on Laval with 8 minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
And lost in overtime.
I saw that.
I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I saw the Laval tweet basically saying, what a comeback. There was 8 minutes left. They were down 3-0, and they won. So
now Laval is tied with Rochester. Like, think of this. The Amherst just went on a 14-3 run. Now, Laval has caught them. The Monsters are one behind. So there's three teams in the North separated by 1 point. There's five teams separated by 6 points. It's the way it always is, but it's still awfully challenging as the Amherst get set. For 3-3 nights, they host Lehigh Valley tomorrow at home. Then the same two teams will travel overnight, clash again in Lehigh Valley on Saturday. And then the Amherst go on to Hershey on Sunday for a 5 p.m. start. So 3-3, and it could dramatically impact the standings based on how tight it is right now.
So. I love it. I love it that it's tight. I love it that the guys in Rochester are getting that experience, that pressure, that push. They're having success. I think it's awesome. And look, you talk about the Sabres a point a week. Tonight in the National Hockey League, there's 13 games. We're going to see Ottawa hosting Washington. So let's go Caps. The Lightning have the Ducks. The Red Wings are playing Panthers. Blue Jackets have the Sharks. Like, there's a lot of those teams. Montreal is in Dallas. The Rangers are in Utah. There's a lot of those teams that are right ahead, right, that are going to play tonight. So by the time we get on the show tomorrow, mm-hmm. and the Sabres have their game tomorrow against Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. there could be some even more openings, right, than saying, right. hey, Look at how it all fell apart, or look at how it all fell in the lap for the Sabres to take advantage of the situation.
Hence, with an undisclosed ailment, not expected to play against Montreal tonight for the Dallas Stars. Brandon Saad is expected to be a healthy scratch for the Blues against Calgary. It's interesting yep. because the Blues have been going okay, but Saad has not. And
weird schedule with that one. Duffer, Calgary played in St. Louis 2 days ago.
Yes.
And they're playing in St. Louis tonight. They stayed in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. For the 3 days, it's like a playoff series, like a mm-hmm. home, like not even a home and home, a yep. home and home in St. Louis. That's what yes, it was.
The Devils did that to the Panthers this year and won both yeah. while they were down there. Anyway,
it's like a COVID schedule where you play like the same team for three games in a row or something.
Yeah. Well, Darren Dreger's coming up, so maybe I should save it for then. But I was going to say, with the Blues situation and Saad expected to be a healthy scratch, I was looking at. You know, if the Blues, who are 3 points out in the West, believe that they want to add here at the deadline to give them a little bit better chance.
Yeah.
I honestly, because his name has been in the news cycle a lot, I think they should bring back Ryan O'Reilly. Well, and especially now when you're moving Saad out, because it, like, this to me is like exactly where, like, Ryan is not going to do the high 70s points like he did the first time around with St. Louis, but he's a really good fit. His production's been pretty consistent. He's more on pace right now for what he typically does in the course of his career, which is like 50 to 65 points. But his best years, obviously, were St. Louis. I think it would be a perfect fit for them.
I think Ryan O'Reilly to the Toronto Maple Leafs is going to get into the rumor mill even more now with the John Tavares injury. Mm-hmm. They were already looking for a center, maybe a third-line center, to be able to help the mm-hmm. depth. He's been in Toronto before, so they know what they would be getting over there. And he's played for
Craig
Berube.
They didn't get what St. Louis got with him, though.
I know, but he played for Craig Berube. He mm-hmm. won the cup with Craig Berube in St. Louis. So, mm-hmm. you know, I bet you that that would be a pretty good fit in Toronto. So I think there would be more than one team looking for a Ryan O'Reilly-type player at the deadline.
Yes, and it's not a rental O'Reilly, though. That's the thing. He has two more years at 4.5. So it comes with a commitment. And we can get into that a little bit later with Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. What a weekend. We've got Sabres back home tomorrow against Pittsburgh, and then Bandit Land comes to life again on Saturday. Battle of the two top teams in the league right now, and really, it's the battle that ignited lacrosse in this city back in the early 90s, when John Tavares and Philadelphia Buffalo, man, yep. that's all it was. Back in the first half of the 90s, was these two teams constantly in the finals. And it's so actually really, I hate to say it, but it's really good to see Philadelphia doing well, because I love this matchup. And it is honky-tonk night in Bandit Land. Country music vibes rolling all night long. And all you got to do, go to bandits.com/tickets to purchase yours today, or scan the QR code on the screen right now if you're watching on MSG. Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN, is next.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling along here on Sabres Live on the heels of a win last night for Buffalo over Carolina. They'll try to duplicate it against Pittsburgh tomorrow. Our regular contributor, long-term contributor to this show, Darren Dreger, I would say almost in his home office today, inside an arena on the Canadian prairies, looking good. How are you, Dregs?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Here I am in sunny Winnipeg. It is sunny, in fact, in Winnipeg today, and I don't know what this translates into in Fahrenheit, but it's like just above zero here in Winnipeg. But it sounds like it's going to be cold for the weekend. But just in for the Winnipeg Jets and the Seattle Kraken in my annual pilgrimage back to my homeland. So looking forward to a good day.
Because you're in Winnipeg, I want to ask you a couple of questions. Number one, do you think Connor Hellebuyck should deserve some Hart MVP consideration? And is Shifley Connor the best duo in the league right now with the way they're playing with the Jets?
Well, right now, I think that's a fair argument with Shifley and Connor. And there seems to be an ongoing, I don't know if it's fair to call it a debate, but it's questioned as to whether or not Kyle Connor qualifies as an NHL superstar. And I'm in the camp that thinks he's an NHL superstar just because of everything that he brings. Now, where are you making that comparison? Are you looking at McKinnon, McDavid, Draisaitl, Makar, guys like that? I don't know. But what I know is this guy can just flat out play and put the puck in the net. And we saw that with a natural hat trick earlier this week. And there's just something different about Mark Scheifele. And by different, it looks like he's more comfortable in whatever role he has to play any given night. Now, you know that he is, you know, most often the guy that helps drive their offense. The power play in Winnipeg has been electric basically all season long. Mm-hmm. But I would agree, Marty, again, if we're having an in-the-moment, a now conversation, Connor and Chudley are right up there with the best.
Which of the two teams you're seeing tonight, Seattle, Winnipeg, is going to be more active at the deadline?
Well, it feels like Seattle, just based on the adversity that the Seattle Kraken are dealing with here. And we know that they've got some pending free agents. You know, Yanni Gord is a name that's basically on every trade graphic that exists now across the networks and all of the accounts that follow the National Hockey League. But again, the question that kind of continues to swirl around Yanni Gord is, what are you getting? Are you acquiring a veteran center as a third line guy, or on a good team, is he a fourth line guy, right? And it depends on, you know, what type of center you're looking for. You know, there aren't many coaches that don't like big centers. Well, Yanni Gord isn't that, but he's a very competitive piece. So I think that he definitely gets moved. You know, beyond that, it is going to be interesting to see what Ronnie Francis does, because that ownership group with the Seattle Kraken has high expectations. You know, they break into the National Hockey League on expansion and really on the heels of the Vegas Golden Knights. So we all know what the Vegas Golden Knights have accomplished in a short period of time, especially what they did right out of the gate. Now, you know, Seattle didn't expect to do that, but the expectation is that they're a far better team than what their record is showing and the slump that they've been in. And I've talked to lots of executives across the NHL specifically about Seattle, and I think you guys would agree. I'm watching this team take the morning skate right now. Tells me nothing. But when I look at the group of players here, yeah, Jordan Eberle is hurt. But on paper, this team should be way better than what their record shows. And nobody seems to understand as to why that is. What is the problem? What is holding this group back? But I can guarantee you those questions are being asked of Ronnie Francis and Dan Bylsma.
So you mentioned Yanni Gord, and center is going to be the big talk, I think, leading up to the deadline. The Leafs put Tavares on IR. We had a conversation about Ryan O'Reilly. Where can O'Reilly go? Can he go back to St. Louis? Can he go to Toronto? Do you think there will be a lot of centers that will move? Like, if I had to set an over-under, are we talking about 8 centers that will move before the deadline?
It's hard, really hard to handicap that, right? What we know is that there are a handful of teams, at least maybe as many as a dozen, and that might be like that, are looking for some sort of ad at center ice. Now, you've got some teams that are looking for a top six center, and that's not going to fly. But you've got teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs when John Tavares is healthy that for sure are looking for a bottom six center. I would wonder if you want to talk specifically here, Marty, of Ryan O'Reilly. And let's just back it up for a moment. His name is out there for the right reasons, but that doesn't mean that Barry Trotz is shopping him. It's just that teams are calling because of where Nashville is positioned right now. And they're looking at O'Reilly and going, okay, well, given his experience, his pedigree as a Stanley Cup champion, I mean, he ticks a lot of boxes. But if we want to link O'Reilly in a return to Toronto, I guess why I hesitate in thinking that's a good fit. I know the connection to Craig Berube. I understand the time they spent together in St. Louis. But if you've got Austin Matthews, you've got John Tavares, I mean, is Max Domi going to stick at center ice? Don't know. You've got David Camp as your fourth line guy. Can you have John Tavares, who's having a brilliant year despite the fact that he's going to be out for a while now? I mean, he's getting slower over time. I mean, age is starting to be a factor in Tavares' game, and most definitely is a factor for Ryan O'Reilly. So I don't know that he's a great fit for Toronto, but given the history, I think that there'd be some consideration. But Barry Trotz has to have that conversation with ROR. You know, out of respect to Ryan O'Reilly, do you want to go to a playoff team? And even though I don't have to pick the team you want to go to, I'd like to do you a favor. They've got to have that conversation.
You didn't mention the term left on O'Reilly's deal. So yeah. you don't see that as an inhibitor like for anyone like Toronto? They would figure out a way to make it work for the next couple of years?
Well, and they would if it came down to Ryan O'Reilly being the right piece. And Duffer, that's where I struggle because I don't think that we're having this chat right now. I don't think that he's at the top of their list. I really don't. And, you know, there is the affordability factor. You know, you can only play that game of taking on term or offering term for so long and with just a number of players before you go, okay, hold on a minute. That's how they got Chris Tanev. That's why Chris Tanev signed with the Maple Leafs. I mean, yeah, of course, he thinks he's got a real good chance to win there, but they overpaid him in term. Not necessarily in money. Toronto isn't worried about what Chris Tanev is going to look like because they'll find a way. They'll find a way to get away from that contract when that time comes up. Maybe they get to that place with Ryan O'Reilly when they've exhausted all the other center opportunities that are out there between now and March 7th.
I thought they closed Robida Island in Toronto. Maybe they'll have to reopen Robida Island. It feels like the Cal Dubas Pittsburgh Penguins Tristan Jarry saga is probably one of Robida Island the movie that's going on. So Jarry will mostly expected to clear waivers at 2:00 this afternoon.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the first step to potentially trading Tristan Jarry and retaining some salary and reacquiring some money at some point? Or do you think that's is over like three more years at 5.375? Jarry is going to be in the minors until he can figure out his game?
Probably that. I mean, I can only go based on, you know, some of the intel that I gathered when he was placed on waivers yesterday. And I had a couple of managers that flat out said he's sailing through waivers. Don't even worry about the 24-hour period. Just report immediately because nobody is going to claim him. And, you know, when I look at the work that Kyle Dubas has done, we can all be super critical, right? I mean, he swung for the fence initially and bringing in Erik Karlsson. Well, that hasn't worked out well. But, I mean, new ownership of the Pittsburgh Penguins at that point felt strongly that they had to give it one more go. Just add another real good piece, and let's see if that's enough to help the future Hall of Famers make one more push. And it didn't, and it isn't. You know, that's not to say that the Penguins aren't competitive, but I think what we're seeing now from Dubas is he's trying to transition on the fly. It's like an undercover retool or renovation, but it's short of a rebuild. So I have no doubt that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to look different, if not much different, on March 8th than they do right now. I believe that. And, you know, it might be some depth pieces. You know, Peterson's name has been out there for a long, long time. You know, I'm starting to hear Drew O'Connor and some other pieces that could be or are in play. So it's that type of work that I think that Kyle Dubas is most likely going to do. I don't know how he gets out from under the Tristan Jarry contract. You know, in hindsight, that was a tough deal that he made in extending Jarry when he did.
Happy 33rd birthday to Buffalo's Jason Zucker. The question is, will he be getting a contract extension a little after this birthday celebration, or do you think that Zucker will be in play at this year's deadline?
I would think that he would be in play, and that's not to suggest that, you know, Adams and the Buffalo Sabres don't see the value and have the experience that he provides, especially with a team that's still, you know, trying to find their way. So there's still a youthfulness about the Buffalo Sabres. So those players do have value, but you guys know the dance, right? You know, what you do is you have the conversation with Zucker's agent and you find out what's he expect in term? What does the money look like? And then you balance that with the trade conversations that you've had and the value that you might get in return for a piece like that. So high level of respect from the organization towards Jason Zucker. And I don't think that they're too far down the path in having those extension conversations. I could be wrong there, but it does feel at this point that he's likely more of a player in play.
Dregs, usually we save like birthdays and, you know, in this day type of situation for the last segment. But because you've been around for such a long time, you're a well-traveled man. Bob Uecker passed away at 90 today, 10 days away from his 91st birthday. I want to know if, like, those type of play-by-play guys, like the legendary, like the Rick Jenerets of these, the other thing, like if you grew up idolizing them and listening to them and the characters that they were, because you're a character, you are a character, Dregs, but Bob Uecker was definitely a major character. So anything you remember from your, you know, your travels and being a baseball fan back in the days?
Oh, boy. Well, not related to baseball, but I can connect that to the hockey world for sure. I mean, you know, from a Canadian perspective and my vintage, like who didn't grow up, you know, almost worshiping in a broadcast perspective, Bob Cole. You know, I love the way that Bob would just set the table. And it didn't matter if it was a 5-0 hockey game, the anticipation build, especially in the playoffs, was second to none, in my opinion. So I broke into this business effectively as a play-by-play guy for the Brandon Wheat Kings. And before that, I did some work in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League and in senior hockey in Saskatchewan. But I idolized Kurt Kielbach. I don't know if you remember that name. He was a play-by-play guy for the Winnipeg Jets for a long, long time. And he had such this big, booming, powerful voice. And on top of that, just a wonderful character. And you know, hockey is lucky, and it's changed over time, of course. But, you know, you've got all the great voices. Rick Jenerette, of course, there. You know, I think of Bob Cole, Harry Neal on the fly. Joe Bone of the Toronto Maple Leafs is vintage. He's been there for a long, long time. So we go on and on and on. All great storytellers and wonderful at their craft.
Yeah, there's a never-ending list of people in those positions that have – really just made this sport a part, made any sport a part of a fan's life beyond what you could have ever imagined. It is an incredible bond, you know, and I can only imagine how sad everyone is across baseball, but especially in Milwaukee, where Bob Uecker's legacy was forever.
How many Miller Lights do you think he's had in his life? Like, calling games with a big Miller Light. Like, that had to be, like, the number one thing you wanted to see.
Yeah, but back in the day, fellas, you would know this. Like, those guys did that. Like, the play-by-play and the color guys back in the day, they did that. They either had a rum and coke going or a cold beer. There's always something going
on. Dregs, there's a soundbite of Rick Jenerette in a game on the radio, and the guy walked by the table and grabbed his beer, and he goes, and Perot over, hey, bring back my beer. Like, he's like, what are you doing? So there's a sound of that somewhere going on.
That's awesome.
Dregs, thanks for the visit from Winnipeg tonight. Enjoy the trip. We'll see you next week.
Hey, guys, have a great weekend.
Sabres Live rolls on after this.
You're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
A couple of minutes to go here on Sabres Live. Marty, didn't get your hot take on Jason Zucker and his future, whether it's here or elsewhere. What do you think?
Depends where the Sabres are at. I think this is going to be a game time decision. When I think game time decision, I'm saying March 7 is the trade deadline. It's, you can have the conversation with Zucker's agent and Zucker about contract, with other teams about trade. But where are you on February the 28th? Where are you on March 1st, March 2nd? And that's going to dictate it. If you're out of it, trade, because Zucker is going to be wanted. But if you're there a couple of points out, I think you got to go for it. So, no, I wouldn't trade him in that situation if you're just a couple points out or in a playoff spot by that point.
Marner with Toronto, Rantanen with Colorado. Which is more likely to not be with their respective team next year?
Oh, I love the this or that here. I would have to say Marner with Toronto. I think Rantanen is going to get a lot of money, but Colorado is going to give him that money. Where Marner, look, if it was a situation where you're like, we want him, I think it would have been done. But now you have Matthews, lots of money, Nylander, lots of money. You got to figure out your depth. So I'm not so sure. I think they both stay with their team, but if you ask me this or that, I'm saying more likely Marner is not than Rantanen not being with Colorado.
Still with the Avs, who host Edmonton tonight. Unfortunate Casey Mittelstadt continues to be mired in a very, very, very poor run. In fact, Ryan McLeod has more goals now, two more goals than Casey has, and Casey has two more points, but Mittelstadt has just been really quiet over the last 26 games. It's been tough for him out there as they try to navigate their way. Any final thought in your last 2 seconds?
See me at the casino tomorrow, pregame. I'll sign autographs.
Sounds good. See you then.